At the legislature today, as a deadline approaches, the debates during floor sessions are becoming intense at the state capitol. In the Senate, Republicans split on an important amendment regarding the Crime Victims Fund. In the House, passionate debate over a bill that's been sitting around all session. These stories and more coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Beth Voorhees. Senators today passed a number of bills during their morning floor session, including one reclassifying counties from 10 divisions based on property value to 5. That bill will also result in a raise for many county employees due to the reclassification. Senators also pushed off a vote on teacher pay raises until their session tomorrow. But it was an amendment offered by a Republican senator that broke party lines for both support and opposition, Ashton Mara reports.
Senators today approved legislation creating the Overdose Prevention Act, a bill that allows for immunity from some misdemeanor offenses when a person calls for help for him or herself or another during an overdose. Also passed was the Move to Improve Act, calling for 30 additional minutes of activity to be incorporated in a school day, and a bill authorizing the transfer of land between state agencies to build a new veterans nursing home in Beckley. But it was a proposed amendment to the Crime Victims Compensation Fund that divided the Senate, but not necessarily on party lines. The fund is used to reimburse innocent victims of crime who have suffered personal injury and who have incurred out-of-pocket losses as a result of the criminal act. Currently, the state is compensating property owners from the fund who have to clean up illegal meth labs after renting or leasing their space. Republican Senator Mitch Carmichael says the account is suffering because of the lab cleanup costs.
Any money that we spend to compensate victims of crime for assault, battery, the injuries that result from that, the state of West Virginia is reimbursed 60 cents on a dollar. But for crime related to the meth lab cleanup, the federal government reimburses West Virginia zero, nothing. And as a result of that, our Crime Victims Compensation Fund has been depleted from approximately $6 million, down, the reports say, around $2 million.
Democratic Senator Brooks McCabe, a real estate agent, disagreed with Carmichael's assessment and opposed the amendment.
These property owners are, in fact, injured. This is not something that is covered by their insurance. If, depending on the unit, that unit, in all probability, is uninhabitable, they have to put notice into the county. They've got to remediate and clean it up. And it is clearly a cost, in most cases, well exceeding $8,000 to $10,000, and in many cases, it makes the unit uninhabitable on a permanent basis unless it is remediated. From my perspective, the majority of these property owners are not in the position to fund this out of their assets, which means that we are, by not helping them and compensate the damage done to them as a victim, you are, in essence, taking out, removing the housing stock, just the kind of housing stock that we want to have that's affordable for our residents.
Republican Senator Clark Barnes stood to back McCabe's position, saying just because West Virginia is the only state offering property owners compensation in these instances doesn't mean the state is wrong in doing so.
Yesterday, we heard the report from the Crime Victims Fund of how the cleanup had grown in the past year. And with the passage, Mr. President, of Senate Bill 6, it is the belief of many that we have certainly made headway in cutting into the meth labs. Now, if we truly believe that we are cutting into the meth labs, it's somewhat hypocritical to vote on the one hand that we're for Senate Bill 6 and then to be for the amendment offered by the senator.
Carmichael, however, stuck to his view that the aid was preventing the state from doing good for other deserving victims.
From a priority perspective, We don't have unlimited money. That's what we do here. We set priorities with limited amounts of funds. And so to the extent that we're going to say a person who was clubbed on a street and suffers enormous economic damage from that could potentially not be compensated because we're paying a landlord to clean up a meth lab. And for those reasons, I just think just a simple priority perspective and saying that, hey, you can cook meth in your property. The landlord doesn't have to pay that degree of diligence that there is a state backup to pay for that. So for those reasons, I would ask that you support this amendment. Thank you.
On a voice vote.
Questions on the adoption of the amendment offered by the senator from Jackson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. I declare the amendment adopted.
The amendment was narrowly adopted. Senate Bill 204 relating to crime victims' compensation awards will be put to a vote by the full chamber tomorrow. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara in the Senate.
With the final day for bills to be approved by their body of origin coming tomorrow, the House looked at a bill that was introduced on the first day, but was put in limbo for the majority of the session due to its controversial nature. As Aaron Payne reports, debate over the Government Fraud Prevention Act lasted until the very end.
House Bill 4001 was introduced on the first day of the session as the False Claims Act. However, opponents of the bill referred to it as the Sue and Settle Bill. The bill offers monetary compensation to whistleblowers who bring forward information regarding fraudulent claims made against the government if the case is successful. Supporters of the bill claimed it would provide taxpayers protection from fraud, while opponents claimed it would only provide lawyers with plaintiffs. The bill was approved by the Judiciary Committee twice as the bill was sent back after concerns from the business community arose. In the floor session, debate began with Delegate John Schott asking Delegate Tim Manchin numerous questions about the bill, one of which was how the state could fully benefit financially when adding another party to receive compensation currently pursued without whistleblowers.
So what we've added with respect to what's now in place in Medicaid cases is an ability for a third party to be compensated in that case and for there to be attorney's fees taken out of the share recovered by the state, correct?
I'm sorry, you'll have to repeat that question,
yes.
Friend.
What we've added to the law as it currently stands is a way that the person who brings the matter to the attention of the authorities will be compensated and share in the recovery, correct?
What this action does, or that, or what we have in effect?
By this new statute, if we adopt it.
Yes, that's correct.
Supporters of the bill said that the benefit was in providing incentive for whistleblowers to come forward that wouldn't normally. After the questioning, delegates spoke both for and against the bill.
While the name of this legislation has changed from the False Claims Act to the more politically appealing Government Fraud Prevention Act, as the saying goes, you can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig. Aside from the removal of the retroactivity clause that even the paid advocate for a major trial lawyers association was unable to defend during the charade of an informational hearing conducted in this chamber, it's still the same proposal that would make it more difficult, if not impossible, for small companies to do business with the state. It's still the same proposal that allows an accuser to pursue a newly created cause of action without first exhausting administrative remedies.
This bill is about fraud on the government, detecting it and ending it. Let's take a look at the states that have the same or similar laws. California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, District of Columbia, Florida, Georgia, Hawaii, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Montana, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Rhode Island, Tennessee, Texas, Washington, Wisconsin, and Mr. Speaker, Virginia.
And the worst thing about this bill, in my mind, having been in this legislature now for 3 years, is what wasn't done with this bill. We spend a lot of time in interim studying significant and sometimes not so significant issues. If this was a need, as much of an urgent need as it appears to be because it was the first bill introduced this session, one would have thought there would have been serious study given to it.
We have not had one of these states repeal their bill. If it were costing them more money than they were taking in, wouldn't somebody have repealed it by now? Doesn't that tell us it's working?
In the end, the majority determined that the risks of the bill outweighed the reward, and the bill was rejected by a vote of 42 to 55. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Aaron Payne in the House.
After the vote defeating the bill, Speaker Tim Miley issued the following statement. I am disappointed that this effort to reduce fraud on the government was rejected by a majority in the House of Delegates. Every member claims to come to Charleston with the goal of eliminating fraud and waste and to protect taxpayer funds, yet that was not evident in the vote today. Currently, West Virginia receives up to about 30% of recovered Medicaid funds, while states that have false claims statutes approved by the federal government receive up to 40%. Speaker Miley said House leadership will consider assigning the legislation to an interim committee for further study following the regular session. In a moment, we'll learn about the important work foundations and nonprofit organizations do for West Virginia and how you can become a philanthropist. But first, here's a look at what's coming up in the Senate tomorrow. Among the bills up for passage, Senate Joint Resolution Number 10, proposing a constitutional amendment designated as the right to hunt and fish in West Virginia. The purpose of this amendment is to protect the right of West Virginians to hunt and fish and to ensure access to hunting and fishing for future generations. Senate Bill 393, allowing the governor to borrow money from the Rainy Day Fund in fiscal year 2014. Senate Bill 486, to establish salaries and provide raises for employees within the West Virginia State Police Forensic Laboratory. Senate Bill 539, authorizing active law enforcement officers and certain retired law enforcement officers acting as security for schools to carry deadly weapons on a school bus, on school property, or at school-sponsored functions. And House Bill 4350, to provide for the awarding of a West Virginia Veteran Service Decoration and a West Virginia Service Cross and Ribbon to certain qualifying West Virginia veterans. Foundations and nonprofit organizations see themselves as catalysts for finding solutions to West Virginia's challenges in critical areas, such as the economy, education, community and economic development, and much more. Joining us to discuss philanthropy here in West Virginia is Becky Kane Sepperly, the president and CEO of the Greater Kanawha Valley Foundation in Charleston, and Paul Daugherty, the president and CEO of Philanthropy West Virginia, which was formerly known as West Virginia Grantmakers. Welcome. So glad you're here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Why the name change from West Virginia Grantmakers to Philanthropy West Virginia?
Well, Beth, grant makers is kind of an industry term, and it's a little dated. And so many times in the public sector, they've not understood what we were as grant makers, misconstrued as grant writers or grant seekers. But actually, we changed the Philanthropy West Virginia to represent the broad segment of foundations, private, family, corporate, community, and even individual philanthropists in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the Kanawha Valley Foundation. Make us aware of that.
The Greater Kanawha Valley Foundation is what is called a community foundation, which means that anybody can be a philanthropist. You can give $1 and that money will go out into the community. You can start a fund for $10,000 if you'd like, any amount in between. We give grants to nonprofits in a wide array of education, arts and culture, land use, recreation, health, human services. We serve a 6-county region. Mm-hmm. We have 500 separate funds, 500 different individuals have created their own charitable purpose, their own charitable need, and we administer all those 500 funds for these folks so they can make contributions to improve the quality of life in this 6-county region up and down the Kanawha River.
I didn't realize that it was structured that way. I thought a foundation, you put the money in a big pot, but it's 500 separate foundations that you are overseeing.
Yes.
That's impressive.
And that is what separates us from some of the other foundations you're used to hearing about, the family ones, the private ones, corporate ones. Mm-hmm. And so it is an everybody's opportunity to be a philanthropist by giving through the foundation and being able to help the community in perpetuity. These are endowed funds. We were created 51 years ago with $40,000, which was a lot of money then. Mm-hmm. At the end of 2013, we had over $215 million. In that 51 years, not only have we grown like that, but we've given over $95 million to this six-county region.
Right.
I mean, that's the kind of impact individuals working together, these 500 separate funds, can have on a community.
Mm-hmm. What's the state of philanthropy in West Virginia? Not just the Kanawha Valley, but all throughout the state.
Well, in particular, there's many other community foundations in the state, but, you know, three things we kind of measure it by are charitable giving, itemized charitable giving. And so in the most recent report for the end of 2013 was the report we've not recovered from the Great Recession in 2008. Mm-hmm. Combined itemized charitable giving in West Virginia is about $491 million, so nearly $500 million. But when you look at where we were prior to 2008, it was a much higher number, about $550 million. So we're still recovering that regards. Mm-hmm. When you compare West Virginia to other states, when you look at foundations based here, foundation assets and grants made, we're a state what's called on the philanthropic divide.
Oh.
Meaning when you look at the different states, we're at the bottom per capita as to how much we have. And when you consider how fortunate West Virginia is with our natural resource production over the years, we've not captured that. We're fortunate to have the Greater Kanawha Valley Foundation, among others. So we're probably about sixth on the list. The Big Sky Mountain Institute out in the Midwest, mm-hmm. or the Far West, mm-hmm. does that report.
Mm-hmm. As we see, for instance, Senator Jeff Kessler wants to put money away in the future fund.
Yes.
And we see an economic boom in the Marcellus Shale gas fields. Is this what you're talking about in terms of, you know, kind of looking at that money, isolating that money, and convincing someone to say, hey, you could better your community with an investment of this little or this much?
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's just as simple as that.
It's simple as that. You know, whether they want to be of great wealth and do their own foundation, but you don't have to be a Warren Buffett, a Bill Gates, or Oprah Winfrey. You can be the retired miner, the person who has worked in the school system, and be able to set something up with your community foundation, $5,000, $10,000, or an estate gift in your will. You know, Beth, we've been here before 125 years ago when we were massively exploring all our natural resources at that point in time. That wealth was produced, held here temporarily, but now the big foundations in New York and Chicago and Pittsburgh and other places, their wealth came from here, but their grant making's not here. Now is our opportunity to position ourselves to make the public aware of giving to their local community foundation opportunity. And there are great partners, whether it's Greater Kanawha here in the Valley or the Community Foundation for the Ohio Valley up in Wheeling.
Mm-hmm.
We are serving about, community foundations serve about 51 out of 55 counties in the state. But then there's also the private, family, and corporate foundations.
Mm-hmm.
But we have been here once before, and now is our opportunity actually to position ourselves to make that opportunity to stay here. So it's a great complement to the work that Senator Kessler is doing with the Future Fund.
All right.
And, of course, the Future Fund concept in other states have not only included the types of things that the legislation that was passed in our Senate, it also included a small percentage of that money going to grow philanthropic dollars, mm-hmm. Which is not in her legislation in West Virginia.
Speaking of legislation, what do you seek from the legislature? Anything?
Well, in particular, one project that's been, when policy matters, but the Neighborhood Investment Program. It's been a great impact since the 1990s of being able to encourage and growing charitable giving to nonprofits across our state. And one key thing for Philanthropy West Virginia, as well as our West Virginia Nonprofit Association, is seeing the continuing that legislation, because it leverages a public resource and doubles that gift from private giving, creating permanent opportunities in our communities.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else that you seek, either from the federal level or the state level, from the legislature?
From the federal level, we're looking at a huge opportunity or response to an opportunity, and that is the charitable deduction in and of itself. There have been attempts to and suggestions to remove that tax break for charitable contributions. And, of course, we're adamantly opposed to that. We feel that it does make a difference, and it will definitely impact the amount of giving. Mm-hmm. That's not the only reason why people give, but it is certainly an extra incentive for people to make charitable contributions. And for people to reduce the current level or to do away with it entirely in order to generate more revenue, we think is a major mistake, and we're working very hard to see that that doesn't happen.
Tell me a story
a story of success that is a result of a foundation in West Virginia. Can you think of one on the spot?
Well, I'd say one statewide is what we've really worked on is that Philanthropy West Virginia got a large chunk of funds a couple years ago. And it had to be focused on youth and family initiatives and children. And so we looked at it as a perspective to be entrepreneurial, be innovative. How can we use this to leverage other dollars? So with that work, as we focused on projects across the state, saying that funders had to partner locally to raise matching capital. We went from $155,000 contribution to a $310,000 investment that involved about 25 different funders across the state, served six regional communities on projects from childhood obesity, anti-bullying, youth attendance in schools, that impacted 20 counties and roughly directly and indirectly 16,000 children and youth. And so that's running from Middle Ohio Valley, where they did anti-bullying in the school systems, to Wheeling, they were working on issues related to improving lifestyle changes and healthy eating in the schools, to youth and recreational opportunities in Beckley, to youth leadership over in the Eastern Panhandle. That's just one unique way foundations and nonprofits work as partners with government and the private sector to bring resources, but most importantly, enhance the quality of life here. But Greater Kanawha Family Foundation with its Charleston, the new Charleston Initiative, is another one of those great projects.
That's we actually brought together the business community with so many of the resources. You know, we don't, our resources are dwindling just like everybody else's. And so we decided that we needed to be strategic about how we work together and not only just look at each other in terms of philanthropy, but also look at other businesses that contribute. Mm-hmm. But some of the things that if you want to look at visual things of how philanthropy's contributed, look at the Clay Center for the Arts and Sciences.
All right.
Look at the Schoenbaum Family Enrichment Center over on the west side.
Plenty,
look at the farmers market.
Plenty of examples throughout the state. Becky Sepperly of the Greater Kanawha Valley Foundation and Paul Daugherty of Philanthropy West Virginia. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's our pleasure.
And here's a look at what's coming up in the House tomorrow. Among the bills up for passage in the House, House Bill 2446, making the crime of soliciting a minor a felony. House Bill 4141, to repeal the statutory provision which authorizes the state tax commissioner to issue business licenses for the purpose of selling drug paraphernalia, to void licenses already issued, and to prohibit the sales on and after July 1st, 2014. House Bill 4156, the Electronic Toll Collection Act. House Bill 4168, requiring any items purchased by state agencies to be made in the United States. House Bill 4204 prohibits the non-renewal or cancellation of a property insurance policy as a result of certain claims arising from weather events. House Bill 4221, permitting retired teachers to teach college-level courses without the loss of benefits. House Bill 4225, to provide for emergency contact information on driver's license records with the Division of Motor Vehicles to be used by law enforcement. House Bill 4286, to regulate captive cervid farming as an agricultural enterprise. House Bill 4327, to prohibit healthcare practitioners from knowingly and in bad faith prescribing or administering drugs in a manner not in accordance with accepted medical standards and providing felony criminal penalties for violations. House Bill 4346, to establish separate standards of performance for carbon dioxide emissions from existing coal-fired and natural gas-fired electric generating units. House Bill 4375, to establish the West Virginia Voluntary Employee Retirement Accounts Program in the State Treasurer's Office. House Bill 4411, relating to the disposal of drill cuttings and associated drilling waste generated from well sites at commercial solid waste facilities. House Bill 4449, to include proximity detection systems and cameras used on continuous mining machines and underground haulage equipment for tax credit purposes under the West Virginia Innovative Mine Safety Technology Credit Act. House Bill 4501, allowing school security officers to carry firearms on school property. House Bill 4551, to require automatic shutoff of an extraction apparatus where a machine-mounted methane monitor indicates a methane concentration. House Bill 4588, prohibiting abortion after 20 weeks except when the mother has a medical emergency. And House Bill 4620, to lower from 10% to 3% the amount the price of goods and services can be increased for a period following the establishment of a state of emergency. And just this note before we leave you, House Bill 4588, the abortion bill, was moved to third reading this afternoon and was being debated on the floor of the House at newstime. This has been the Legislature Today. Tomorrow, the Travel South USA Winter Showcase has been in Charleston this week. More than 500 tourism professionals engaged in intense business appointments and tours, and this with the state of emergency due to the Elk River chemical spill in effect. We'll talk with Alyssa Bailey, the president and CEO of the Charleston Convention and Visitors Bureau, about the showcase and what our out-of-state visitors thought about the situation. We leave you tonight with a special performance by the Tiger Music Orff Ensemble from New Haven Elementary School in Mason County in the Senate today. I'm Beth Voorhees. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Today is provided by the following.
The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont. Online at WVHTF.org. The West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers. Online at WVAFLCIO.org.